Okay, now we're recording.
All right, we'll call the meeting to order at 6:30. And we'll begin with citizen, well, in, we have in attendance right now, we have everybody except Terry Rose. And
Terry will be right behind.
Terry's right behind, so he'll be here in a minute. And the two youth and governance people are absent. Although the one has just been... Why don't you explain that, Aaron Decker, the situation? I didn't get my email, so I'm not up to speed on that.
There was a youth and governance member of this committee that did not attended less than 50% of the meetings, and the youth and governance themselves enacted a rule that if you attend less than 50% of the meetings, you're out, and a new person can replace you. So we have a new person. She was contacted by me yesterday.
Hello, Terry.
So she couldn't fit into her schedule so such last minute to be on to this, to come to this meeting. So she'll be at the next one.
Okay, so I think that was all part of the call to the order so that people know what's up with the youth and governance person. So everybody now is in attendance on the committee. So do we have any citizens' comments? Any citizens wishing to comment? Seeing none, we'll have the approval of the minutes then.
So moved.
All
second.
Of them?
Yep, all of them.
And who seconded it? David?
David.
Second, Supervisor, motion by Supervisor Gentz, second by Supervisor Arrington on all the minutes. And I noticed they were all, had the time on the tape, so. Looks very good. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. County executive resolutions, we have three of them.
I will do the first two, the Ben Harbach and Sandy Basiglia. Both are reappointments. They have served 1 3-year term on the Kenosha County Board of Administrative Appeals, and we're asking that they serve 3 more years. So it would end actually in June 2014, their term. This is the group that was formed through a corporation council ordinance that was drafted several years ago, and we put them together originally because we had a large number of daycare appeals, folks that as we went out and looked at their child care issues, they had the right to appeal it, so we needed a panel, and that's how they came to be for us and kind of why we're here tonight. But the group does have a much broader authority when it comes to appeals for county business.
Have they had any, have there been some appeals before the board?
By and large, it's just child care. Oh. I think there was one where a pharmaceutical issue at Brookside went in front of them. However, that went a different route. So it's all been the child care issues.
How many?
Yeah.
3, maybe 4.
Oh.
It was a handful.
Not much.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that I was just going to, along those lines, normally they say what their intent, have the, on people succeeding themselves, they have their attendance, but there's really no attendance.
There's 5 members on this appeal panel, and we call at least 3 of them when we need them for an appeal. And so if they're available, they certainly have been in attendance. And I think, have they been to all?
Yeah.
Yes,
all of them,
so they've
sure.
been to...
These two
everyone
have been to all of them.
Right.
Okay.
So it's not a regularly scheduled event. It's just when someone has
got it. Okay.
I'll move those 2 individuals.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Gant, second by Supervisor Kibicki to move and reappoint those 2 individuals and recommend it to the county board. Any questions on all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. John? Next one then would be Dr. Scott Pierce for Workforce Development Board.
Apologies from Dr. Pierce. He contacted us this morning that his wife was hospitalized, so he's not able to attend personally tonight. He's a superintendent of the Westosia School District. In his prior employment, he was a superintendent of the Kenosha Unified School District, and he was on the Workforce Board before. An active member came to the meeting. He also was active on the Youth Council, which is a subcommittee of the Workforce Board.
Any questions for Supervisor Gens.
How was his attendance on the workforce board the last time he was on? I mean, I read his resume, and I needed a couple aspirin when I was done. It was so long. So, I mean, he's certainly very well qualified, but I just wondered about the attendance. And
it was excellent.
I'll move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Gens, second by Supervisor Rose to approve. Any questions or further comments? Be a recommendation then to the full county board. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Next, then, we have Supervisor Underhill to the Commission on Aging.
This is the questionable one.
The Commission on Aging provides oversight to our older Americans programs, and Supervisor Underhill has attended a meeting just to learn more about our programs and has been working with our benefit specialist and other community members to help help older adults and persons with disabilities and accessing voter IDs. He's been interested in our program, and we've been anxious to have a county supervisor on our commission. So we're very happy that Mr. Underhill has agreed to serve.
I'll make the motion to approve.
Second.
Motion to approve by Supervisor Kubicki, second by Supervisor Rose. Any other questions? Is this a date? Does this meet during the day or evening? Or?
Yes, it's on Monday afternoons at 1:00.
And you are available, Supervisor Underhill, at those, yeah, those meetings? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Next, then, on the agenda, review of the 2012 Division of Human Services. But I don't know, what is D? I don't know. D.
Division of Human Services?
Okay. Okay.
That's the department.
Can I go out for a smoke break? No, I think I just went through this, didn't I? Yeah.
Supervisor Kubicki, would you like to present this stuff?
Move to approve.
Second.
As part of our budget resolution in 2011, we're required to come to this committee and several others in order to talk about our contracts. So we thought we'd start tonight kind of a two-step process here with the next agenda item, getting more down in specifics of outcomes of certain contracts, but at least give you an overview that is located on this large one with some yellow print on it, or coloring on it, of all of our contracts. So this document is all the contracts we have with every division in human services. The front page, I'll just go through quickly, just compares our 2011 adopted budget along with the levy amounts and then what we're proposing in 2012 that was approved through our budget process most recently with the county board and this committee. So you can see, for example, in 2011, our adopted budget was 5.3 mil, and in 2012, for the levy portion, and for 2012, it is just a little over that. And the reasons for that were explained during our budget process and located in that lower left-hand corner box, the reduction in FTEs, which was a 3.97 we talked about in our budget meetings, and in the columns over that, to the right, the lower box also lists the reductions in many of our contracts totaling $5 million. If you recall, the big ones there were the state takeover of the Children Long-Term Waiver Program and then the Medicaid Transportation System, which also was taken over by the state. So the other figures in there, you'll see the small increase that we had to give supervised visitation as a result of an audit that we talked about at budget, and then the increase of $100,000 in the Division of Aging and Disability Services pharmacy contract because of medication use for folks who have mental health issues. So those are despite those increases, we did come in at $5 million less. However, the slight increase in our levy, once again, was due to our loss of the IM funding through the state. So that's just a quick overview. The following pages will break out by division. So starting with Division of Aging and Disability Services. There's a number of columns across that. I'm not going to go through them. Certainly the provider name. We have the 2011 information in there, comparing it to 2012, the FTE count, and then a brief description of what that contract provides. So at Supervisor Decker's request about a month ago, we did forward this information on to every county board supervisor, so everybody would have this report. I don't know if there's any specific questions about anything in this. Certainly, our plan was next, through the next agenda item, to talk in a little bit more detail on some of the outcomes that some of these programs are measuring. This document was approved as is part of their requirement through their bylaws by our Human Service Board and our Public Welfare Committees last week.
Any questions just on, well, the cover sheet or any of the attachments? I'm going to start with just one basic question on the cover sheet. The full-time equivalent employees, 254, are those employees that work for these contracts, or these employees that are work for the county and they're related to these contracts?
They're employees with the contracts.
They're employees with the contracts.
Correct.
So they're not really county employees?
No.
Okay. That's what I thought when I was reading it, but I wanted to make sure of that. How many county employees are there that also
Human work? Services is close to 400.
So you have 400 human services for the county and then another 254 that?
Correct.
Wow.
That would also include Brookside when I throw out there.
That's bigger than the town that I grew up in. It's only 404.
It's publishable, Joe.
And you can see one of the items shows that our $76 million budget, roughly 53% of that, a little over 53% of that is contracted services.
Any questions on any particular part of this? I mean, I could probably ask 10 minutes worth of questions on every single one of them.
I think Ed says go ahead.
We certainly would be, this document is large. You've had it for a while now, but we certainly would be available to discuss it at any length or matter outside of this meeting if you got particular questions. When we turn it over and start talking about outcomes, we only pulled out a couple programs to show you, but if there's any contract in here that you want more information or want to hear more about their outcomes, we'd be happy to either do that one-on-one or bring it back in front of this group. That's no problem at all.
Yeah, I did. Go ahead, Terry. I have a couple today.
John, which contracts, if any, do you see as substantially larger in 2012 than 11?
I don't believe there are any that are substantially larger. The only increases, and that was on the front page, are to that supervised visitation contract with Children and Family Services, which increased $60,000, and we added $100,000 to the pharmacy contract in Division of Aging and Disability Services. The rest is pretty much flatlined.
And the supervised visitation is operated by who again?
That is operated through Children's Service Society of Wisconsin, CSSW.
Same as last year?
Yeah, correct.
Is this drug court operated through this also? I see.
Yes.
It is.
A portion of it is.
Okay, where is that? What is that categorized as here?
Well, it's reflected in more than one contract.
I see. So how much is that total out?
We have a part-time drug court coordinator who's employed by Wisconsin Correctional Services. I think the budget for that is $40,000. We have $20,000 to go for treatment, and that's to Oakwood Counseling Associates. Those costs, the majority of those costs are covered by our grant that we received from the Department of Justice. So those are the two areas.
So it's 60,000 total?
About that.
How many people are in there?
Right now, I think there are about 29 to 32 people.
Do you know how many you've had in the program in 2011?
probably about 40.
Are they all misdemeanors?
Some of them are down to misdemeanor, but all nonviolent.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the, and their offenses weren't associated with the sale of drugs. That's an exclusion. So violence and, you know, profiteering from drug are exclusions.
That's a local or grand exclusion?
The violence is a federal requirement. You can't have violent people.
What about the drug exclusion of sale or intent to deliver?
Local decision by okay. the DA.
How about the other mental health court? Is that in here also?
Yeah, that's also a Bureau of Justice Administration grant. That is folded into the kids contract. There also is a three-quarter time coordinator, LaShonda Tolfrey.
Right.
I think that's 35,000.
And how many people are in the program?
They served 32 people last year, 15 people on the roster now. We said through the grant that we would serve 15 people, so we have capacity. It's sort of similar numbers between the drug court and the jail diversion. Two-thirds of the people have been successful, meaning not great.
Is that drug court at capacity?
Depends on what perspective.
So there is no capacity. There isn't a capacity.
There is not
number.
A capacity. Okay. I think you're reaching a point though where until we received this grant, we were pretty much limited by the work schedules of the DA, public defender, of course. And so they're pretty busy. They'll run through like 15 people on a Wednesday afternoon, through court. Hard to see where there's much more capacity unless we put more into staffing. And I don't know that that would be the case, but theoretically, the capacity would be unlimited other than our practical limitations.
Yeah, I had a couple questions. I think a couple things that I circled. This would be on Division of Workforce Development. I just happened to notice too that we're exactly $900,000 in 2011 for K-Town Transportation and Southport Transportation Company. And unless I'm not reading this correctly, I don't see that same. I don't see that in 2012.
Those are the contracts taken over by the state, the transportation. So we're showing you what 11 was. That went away when the state took over.
Okay, so that's what you're talking about
yes.
on the first page then?
Yes. If you look at
that's
this,
just actually where it comes
$1.8 million in the lower right-hand box. EWD, Medicaid Transportation Services Transfer to
okay.
State.
Okay.
And you'd see the corresponding in some of Children and Family Services for some of the children long-term support programs.
And then I just happened to put a star by fiscal management support and purchase Department of Human Division of Health fiscal management support, 2.7 people.
Page
7 of 24. I mean, we have what kind of fiscal support do they give you?
Those are your A&O employees. So that's through Andrea and Nordendorf, and they're doing accounts.
Right, fiscal manager, and then accountant. They have that help part time. It does billing for medical assistance, Medicare. Care coordination, billing for any of the services, other services, handling the bills, helping with grants, management of all the grants that we have.
So you don't have staff to do that?
No.
So they more or less manage? Another one that I noticed, that's sort of working from the back, I guess. I just was wondering how much of this is possibly repetitive or overlapping or something like that, and I happen to just catch several that read the same thing, provides inpatient services, including psychiatric services, i.e. serve as the admitting attending physician to all locally hospitalized patients who are required to receive and or are financially eligible for DAD support. And the first one I saw was Rogers Memorial Hospital, which I had never heard of that place. Right. And then it repeats itself for Dr. Shah, and then Wheaton Franciscan has a good chunk of money, and State Institutes has a big chunk of money.
Those are facilities to treat people who are on emergency detention. In other words, by means of their mental illness, they're a threat to themselves or others. So since this county doesn't operate its own psychiatric inpatient facility like some other communities do, we have to shop the community and place people within a certain amount of time. So the places you mentioned, Aurora Psychiatric in Milwaukee, Rogers Memorial, St. Luke's, Wheaton Franciscan, and both of the institutes, Winnebago Mental Health Institute and Mendota Mental Health Institute, are the places we place people who are very at risk of doing harm to themselves. So we try to place people closest we can to home, and we negotiated rates with these facilities.
So. Where's this Rogers Memorial?
West Dallas.
West Dallas?
Yeah.
Is that cost effective to place them all over the place like that?
Well, we talked about this a lot last year. Unfortunately, our days in inpatient care are way down from last year. We were over $1,250 of paid days. This year, we're projected on at 528 days. So that's quite a drop. Cost effective, these are, like I said, the most difficult people. We try to keep them just for several days apiece unless they have really outstanding needs. So, I actually am sort of proud of that in the sense that Wheaton Franciscan, we have a rate of $650 a day. State institutes are, the rates are imposed by the state, and that can be like $1,000 a day. But for inpatient care, those are pretty good rates. In fact, I don't think we've increased the Wheaton Franciscan rate for like 4 or 5 years.
Now, state institutes, where is that? Like in Union Grove or?
State institutes?
Yeah, where are they all? Just all over the place?
No, there's just two. Mendota Mental Health, which is sort of on the north side of Lake Mendota.
Yeah.
And then Winnebago is right by Fond du Lac.
Okay.
So those are heavily monitored and managed.
I see another place where Andrea and Orendorf, how many altogether does Andrea and Orendorf have working for the county? I mean, I just saw one and I saw 2.7.
I'd have to get back to you on that one. We have several of them in human services. They've been providing accounting support services to the county for a number of years. There's a few even located outside here during the day. So I'd have to get back to you with the exact number, and then okay. I can email the board.
Yeah, no problem. I'm sure we're going to have more questions on this sheet that we don't have to take the time up in this meeting for. At least I intend to ask more questions. Any other questions by anybody else? Supervisor Rose?
Is there money in here for that proposed veterans court?
No, there is not. I know that was one of the discussions we had at a, I guess it was a retreat or workshop almost several months ago when Judge Wagner had indicated that the county was probably going to go forward on that, certainly looking for those type of funds and working with Andrew, the new, what's his name?
Gavard,
yes. As far as maybe finding some funds through the state or issues like that, because I know that was a concern certainly for the DA's office.
So that's not, there's no money in the app at all? Is that just a dead issue?
I believe it's going to go forward. I'm not sure where it is in the planning phase.
I see.
And whether or not Kenosha becomes the veteran court or Racine or Wallet, they're going to do a tri-county one court.
And how is, what? I'm not sure what the purview or scope of that is, but who's going to pay for that?
I think they were, the last discussion I had on it, and I was actually not part, I was just part of listening as they were talking about the development. It seemed as though that it would just be part of their work day, because currently right now veterans are going to court, just different courts, and being treated, albeit not like a veteran court. So this would just have them funneling into one judge to process them.
How does that differ from what we're doing now?
There would be one difference to our advantage. The Veterans Administration would pay for the outpatient treatment. And there's a satellite just right down the way here.
Right.
So that would be a big advantage for us. But I don't know the administration of it. They talk about a regional court, who functions as a court coordinator, the costs associated with our staff being involved with it. But I don't think we'd have to worry about the treatment.
So it sounds like that this is aimed at the veteran who is suffering from alcohol or drug dependence.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's a nonviolent crimes.
Yeah, a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder. Veterans. I think drug court for veterans is sort of all the rage. In fact, there's a lot of proliferation around drug courts. Mothers with custody issues, mom's court. There's just a whole variety of different variations on the theme.
I hadn't heard of that one. Is that?
Have we been keeping track on how many of these veterans have been going to court in the years past and up till now? Tracking number?
That hasn't been anything we in Human Services have tracked. You'd have to check with the court reports on that. Have any data on that?
Thank you.
Any other questions, or shall we move on to the report on contract outcomes? Are we ready for that?
Just a comment. This to me would have been more profitable to review during budget time than now. I think that's the time to have taken this up.
Yes, that was my first thought when I started reading it too. But I guess the timing wasn't ready.
The reason for the delay was during the summer when we were spending a lot of time in Madison trying to have discussions about our income maintenance funding and the possibility of it going away, as we received permission to put this on hold for the time being until we took care of those issues. Once those were cleared up in September, we began working on this document. And this is really the first time that we've been able to come to our boards and committees with this type of work. So it was more of a productivity time frame issue for us, and also with the finance issues in Madison and trying to clear those up.
I would think now that it's to get prepared for the next budget, it should be part of, the budget review process.
Our contracts are always included in the budget, but specifically we have never come in and said A, B, C, D, and E. And if that is something the committee wishes whatever it looks like after April,
right.
We certainly would be entertaining those discussions with them.
I don't know if, I think that I personally feel that, I don't know that this committee could say what to do for the next committee, but I would strongly suggest that if anybody is on that committee, that we, that be brought up and suggested to do that as part of the budget review for the next budget. Or you want to, I don't even know if it's in our purview to do it.
I'm not sure it's in the bylaws of this committee. It's under Human Service Board that we take our contracts for approval. So So we've done that for years.
I don't mean for approval. Just so you have a better, you know, this is a very comprehensive spreadsheet about what it is you're voting on, which is way it's just a better visual than what we had, what I saw, you know, during the budget. And what we saw in the budget was great, but this is, add this to it, it would be really good, even better.
Thank you. I had a question. Are all of the contracts, are they calendar contracts from January 1 to December of 31, or do you...
The vast majority are calendar. If it's a grant that we get through the state or feds, it's a different time frame on it. Certainly some could be from July to June or October to September, but majority are January to December.
So then for purposes of a budget, would it be safe to say that most of these are up for renewal every January 1?
The majority, yes.
And when do you take applications that are RFPs for them, and you go through the solicitation process?
Yeah, we do that in the summer, so we usually have those decisions made by early September.
So by the time we get to the decision, the budget time, have there already been awards of contracts made?
Pending the approval of our budget to the county board, yes. So we notify that you received the award. However, our budget hasn't been approved yet, so we can't enter into a contract until we go through our process with the county board supervisor.
Thank you.
So we don't mail out our contracts. So really right now is when we're starting that for January.
Okay. Well, John, if you make a note of it, as a recommendation for this committee, for the next committee, that this be part of it. That's all I'm
sharing. Sure, it's going away.
Okay. So, should we move on?
Yes.
Okay. Then let's talk about the contract outcomes.
I'm going to turn this over to the division directors. We're just going to go alphabetical and color code them for you. So, we'll start with aging and disability. What you have on the list before they get up here certainly is not all-inclusive of the outcomes we track per contract. We just try to come to you with a rather succinct document. Like I said earlier, if there's something that you want more information on, we'd be glad to share that. This is also our 2010 outcomes. We took the year-end 2010 outcomes versus a snapshot of a quarter in 2011. Just to give you an example, if we were to come to you with a program out measurement from a quarter, Ron printed off one program he had, and it was 10 pages of outcomes. And we would have been stacked from floor to ceiling with paperwork in here. So, like I said, if there's something else you want, more information on one, please feel free to give us a holler, and we can get that for you. So I'm going to turn this over to Laverne and her folks.
If you look on the yellow sheet, column 2, just take two program areas as samples, but I want to let you know that we do have a variety of performance outcome performance measures and outcomes that we measure and we receive information on. Unfortunately, we don't have a real good system, an electronic system for collecting that in a way that can easily feed a document like this. And so we have to pull from a variety of reports to be able to give you the information. And so I apologize for some of the areas that may be blank, but we weren't able to get all of that together in time. I'd like to call your attention to number 7 and number 8. These are two benefit specialist contracts or benefit assistance contracts, one with the Kenosha Achievement Center for Disability Benefit Specialist Services, and the second with Kenosha Area Family and Aging Services for the Elder Benefit Specialist. And the first involves about 1.2 FTEs and the second 2.0 FTEs. It shows you the number of people that were served in, or number of cases opened in 2010, but I think an interesting statistic with these programs are the monetary impact of the programs, and this is measured by either a benefit that an ongoing benefit, and then and that would be measured by a year's value of that benefit, like for Social Security, or it would be the the actual award in the case of a reimbursement or savings to the individual, say, with related to insurance. And then we also measure the customer satisfaction with services and have other outcomes as well. Carolyn Felt supervises that program, and well, Carolyn, if you want to say anything else about it.
So the benefit specialist assists people who have difficulty. Mostly the folks under 60 have applied for Social Security disability, been denied, and then assisted in their appeal of that denial. With the also, the same is true with applying for Medicaid and for appealing decisions of denial with Medicaid or denial of treatment and services. For the elder benefit specialist, most of those situations are dealing with Medicare and private insurance issues. So Medicare denial of treatment or services or bills, or where they're having to advise on selection of Medicare products, whether to enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan or to pick the Medicare Part D plan, which is going on at this time right now. So if you have any questions about those, the services that the benefits that the benefit specialists provide both to older adults and then persons with physical, cognitive, or mental health disabilities.
So this for the older adults is just all you got to do is be old? You don't have to have a mental problem.
There's no income criteria. This is funded primarily under the Older Americans Act, and you have to be 60 years of age or over to be eligible for services. And generally, virtually everyone 65 and over is either receiving Medicare or Medicaid, and there are often issues with those benefits.
You made it sound like you have choices. What, you know, I just assumed that it was you have one choice, Medicare or whatever it's called.
You're not 65 yet, are you?
No. Getting close.
You know, you can call us anytime. And we'll tell you all the benefits. It's dizzying.
It's what?
It makes you dizzy.
It's mind-boggling.
So, plethora of programs. Traditional Medicare. Or you have a choice to enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan, which is like an HMO. And then in addition to that, every year you have to pick a Part D plan for your prescription coverage.
If you see in the paper, almost every week or every other week, there's a little ad in the paper about a Medicare workshop that's provided by the benefit specialist here to help inform people of that. Not everybody needs one-on-one assistance, but a lot of people need information about generally about Medicare, and then at this time of year about the Medicare Part D programs for prescription drugs. On the other side of this sheet, on number 19, this is a different type of contract and a different type of measurement. This is a program that the community support program and comprehensive community services for persons who with persistent, serious and persistent mental illness. And the outcome measure for this is a tool that has actually, it was developed by consumers for consumers, and it has 42 measures of, on this tool. It's called Recovery-Oriented Satisfaction Indicator, or ROSI is the tool that's used. And Jim can explain to you a little bit more about that briefly.
Briefly. I think I might have used up my time. I just want to give you a copy of what we administered the first time.
The clock's ticking from the Human Service Board.
That's right. Yeah. But we'll talk a little just bit about
just kidding. Apologize for interrupting.
We talked a little bit about sort of things that we're interested in as the Human Services Administration. getting people out of more costly inpatient care and moving them out of more costly residential care. But from a consumer standpoint, or the people you serve, they tell you if they were here, they'd like four things. They'd like some relief from their symptoms. They'd like significant social relationships, meaningful things to do during the day, and a safe, affordable house or dwelling. This measures whether or not people are meeting those outcomes and whether they feel supported by us through those outcomes. So in these two programs that Laverne mentioned, we serve, I think right today, we have 189 in the census, and they gave us the following ranks. I think it's sort of important to note that most everybody involved with these programs at some point have been emergency detained. In other words, that their symptoms of severe system mental health were such that it caused threat to themselves or others. So as a period of time has gone, we've worked through resistance, developed a relationship, and we'll see the results in front of us. Four things our consumers wanted us to do, talk about voice and choice, things we've developed, and we will be measuring this next month to see if those scores improve, but we developed a group, a coordinating committee, which reviews policy and procedure. They've taken a part in developing that. Jonathan just got a copy of it today. They've completed their work with 38 pages of human services policy and procedure. I think they deserve some credit for getting through that. I think also we've developed a CSP-CCS coordinating committee, which meets quarterly. Gathering input on how the program is doing. We offer choice. One of the key highlights this year has been the utilization of the care center and allowing people to make a determination during the emergency detention process whether or not they go to the care center or a hospital for at least a voice. And also, too, we've started to have them speak in their own words what they want out of their treatment. So this is the first run-through of this ROSI. We'll be gathering more data in December, and hopefully some of the scores will be moving up. One little twist, one final comment. We've also divided through racial groups to see if there are any differences. There are a couple of things we learned. Pretty significant satisfaction from the African-American community. Which is good to hear. We have a number of our staff in supervisory positions who are African-American, but really underutilization of Hispanic community. And so Laverne, through Healthy People, Kenosha has been trying to develop more system input and has a means to. So that's sort of the mental health.
I just got one question for
you.
When you mentioned about running those ads in the paper for the workshops and stuff, are we doing any kind of tallying on how those are being attended by our individuals in the community?
Yes, we have the in fact, that.
It's on one of these pages, isn't it, here?
Right. On the on number 8, there were 47 workshops held in 2010 with 880 attendees.
That's a great turnout. So that's a good thing to keep on going, and I appreciate your endeavors in that. Thank you. I just want to make a light of some good things for a change.
Okay. A lot of them say for performance indicators, not NA, NA being not applicable, or?
Well, we, in some cases, the meals programs, we have, the provider does collect information on satisfaction and whatnot. We weren't able to pull all of that together for this report, but I can pull that together in the future. We just couldn't access it quickly enough to. We do have other kinds of measures, but we, admittedly, we don't have it in a format that's real easy to pull the information, because we have so many different types of measures.
This Kenosha Achievement Center for the trips to transportation services, and you know, whether it be Western or urban.
There too, there have been satisfaction surveys among surveys of riders, and there is some of that information available. We can provide you at a later date.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you a lot of good news here. So we're going to look at the blue sheet, and this is the Division of Children and Family Services. And we have, this is our program outcomes, again, as John said, from 2010. I'd like to focus on two types of programs, and I've pulled out two examples, and I think Supervisor Kubicki may have heard this part before, but if there's another program we want to talk about, we can do that as well. If you look on the first, it's page 2 of 9, it's program number 5. And it starts on the left-hand side, it's called Community Impact Program, in the agency. And then if you look way to the right, under description of services to be provided, it says Intensive Supervision Youth Competency Program. And this is one of our programs that works with our delinquent youth. So just to remind you, we have 8 social workers in our court services unit, 7 of which supervise youth that have been found delinquent of a crime. So if we were an adult, we would have been convicted of a crime. They're under supervision often for about a year. And during that time, we work with anywhere near around, in a course of a year, we'll touch the lives of about, 520, 550 youth and their families in that delinquency unit. Some of those kids are at very high risk for further problems with the law. They're at high risk for recidivism, meaning they're at high risk to break the law again. And if they break the law again, if they break it a third time, that's what happens then, is those kids need to often get removed from the community, placed in more intensive group home treatment, and if they get into a lot of more serious trouble, they'll even get placed in corrections. Our goal in the Division of Children and Family Services is to turn lives around, is to make improvement with our youth, teach them some skills so they don't break the law again, get them going back to school on a regular basis, and get them so they don't go down a life of crime. So when you look at the description of this program, it talks about, provides intensive monitoring, competency building, groups, interactive recreational activities. But really the big thing is they're working closely with the kids and families, getting very involved with the youth as far as their school attendance, getting them involved in pro-social activities in the community, working with the parents to teach the parents some parenting tips for these delinquent youth so they don't get into trouble again. So last year, in 2010, we worked with 100 youth and their families, and this program is staffed with about 7.5 people. 7 people, full-time equivalents, and then the half position is a supervisor that's split between 2 different programs. They have about a total, when this contract is let out, we work with the provider and we set goals for this contract. It's a dialogue. We have certain goals we expect them to achieve. They often come to the tables with some of their own goals as well. What I did is I pulled out for this program, I thought, the most salient goals that you might find the most interesting in this program. And so first goal was 80% of the participants will not re-adjudicate during program involvement. In 2010, they had a result of 90%, meaning when the kids were in this program, they did not get in trouble with the law again. That is very, very successful. The kids that are in this program are not the kids that have just made one mistake and probably with a little bit of supervision and counseling, they won't get in trouble again. The kids in this program are the kids that we believe are at high risk to reoffend. The kids that are really struggling in school. So these are the kids that really are on their path to more of a longer life of crime. So the next goal that we put down here is 70% of the participants will not re-adjudicate 6 months after successful completion of the program. Their result in 2010 was they were at 82%. And the last goal was 80% of participants will remain in current or less restrictive placement during program. Our goal was at 91%, 91.6. So on each of these key goals, are the kids getting in trouble again after being in the program? No, they're not. Are they getting in trouble 6 months after they're out of the program? No, they're not. And are we keeping them from going into deep end, high cost of care? We are. They're not going to high cost of care. And that means they don't have a longer juvenile record and they're, you know, turning their lives around. So I'm real proud of this program because if although it is an expensive program, what they're able to do with this program is they're able to have so much contact with these kids. When you have seven staff with kids in this caseload, they can have contact with these kids three, four, five, six times a week. And often what they do is they'll start in the beginning at about a five-time-a-week process. If kids are successful, they ratchet that down. And by contact, I mean seeing the kids at home, having conversations with their parents, following up with the kids in school. And what you find with delinquent youth is if you keep close eyes on them, if you tightly monitor them, if you give them pro-social activities to do, they will respond to that, and they will improve their behavior, and they will not get into trouble again. And that's the main goal of the program. So ideally, the goal is to keep make these productive citizens. So, you know, that's one part of what we do. And before I jump to another program, I'd be happy to answer any questions about this.
Any questions?
No, but I just have an announcement. I have a witness that I have to see back in my office at 7:30, unfortunately, so I'm going to have to be stepping out.
Okay.
Not related to
okay.
The
okay, good. Glad
you
to hear.
Sure?
They weren't in the
oh, he's an adult, trust me.
So, Supervisor Celebrini is going to excuse himself for
thank you.
For... All right, then another one. That
okay,
to
then we're going to, I'm going to flip the coin, so to speak, and we're on now page 4 of 9, and we're on program number 13. And this is under the agency's name is Kenosha Area Family and Aging Services. If you look across under the description, so this is Family Preservation provides short-term in-home counseling, intervention, and monitoring families designed as a safety service for children who are at imminent risk of out-of-home placement due to child abuse or neglect. So what this, and then if you look across that number served, in 2010, this program worked with 74 families, improving the lives of 199 children. So how this comes about is we, as you know, we investigate child abuse and neglect. 2010 was a banner year for us. We hit the most investigations we've ever hit. We did 852 between our staff and juvenile crisis in a year's time. During the course of that work, when kids have been maltreated, we have to take action to make them safe. We have to go into court, often place some kids in, ask the court to place them in foster care to protect them, and then they get into, we go through the whole juvenile court process. But during our work with families, there are families that we touch where a child has not been abused yet, but there are many, many risk factors. There are many things going on in the home that our experienced staff in their training would say, this is a very risky environment for these kids. So one group of families that gets referred into this program are families that are gone through the investigation, the Child Protective Services social worker, no child has been abused yet, but all the risk factors are there that something could happen. They get referred into the Family Pres program, and they get, again, very intensive monitoring, but really working with them. And this program goes in for 8 to 12 weeks and does intensive parenting training, household management training, helps families really clean up their house and get it safe again, some developmental assets training, teaching families about the developmental levels of a kid and what is appropriate supervision, what is not for how old your kid is. And what I wanted to focus on is people wonder, can you prevent child abuse? Can you make a difference in people's lives? And you can. And so what I wanted to do is I pulled out three goals from this program that I thought were very good. The first goal was 98% of the parents will learn appropriate developmental expectation for children in order to implement safe methods of discipline. They achieved 100%. meaning they have a scale and a system to measure whether parents are really understanding the developmental age of a six-month-old to a one-year-old to a two-year-old to a five-year-old, and that they can parent their children more safely. The next goal, I think, is very impressive. 90% of the families will have no substantiated child abuse and neglect referrals 1 year after program participation. So we track these families a year later, and we see, did they come back into the system? Did we have to investigate child abuse? Did we find that they've abused their children? They achieved 98%, meaning those families did not come back in the system. And the final goal I wanted to talk about was 80% of the families will provide appropriate housing, clothing, and nutrition for their families. They achieved 94%, and really 95%, 94.8%. And it's, you know, I think at the Human Services Board, when we presented this, you know, the families that get referred in for child abuse and neglect, occasionally you get a middle-class family in there, but really, to be honest with you, most of the families that are referred in are poor, lower-economic families that are really struggling to make ends meet, that have many, many stressors in their lives. And sometimes parents are, you know, struggling with alcohol and drug abuse issues. So what you're working with in this group of families is getting families in a place where they can safely raise their kids without doing something that harms them. This is a very effective program. Again, it's preventing kids from being abused. So it's really doing exactly what you want it to do.
Supervisor.
And it's also a single family.
Yes. The vast majority, you know, you had asked before, it's about 85 to 90% are single family households that we come in contact with.
Thank you.
It's a pretty standard number.
In that program or all?
In many of the child welfare programs, yeah. In that program specifically, I looked it up, yes.
We talked about that before. Yeah. I knew we'd be prepared for now.
He'd asked me that question before.
Well, he was then. He could have went to his office and got it, but I told him that's okay. I can wait till here. So, thank you for that.
You're welcome. But if there's any other question about anything else, I'd be happy to answer it.
Anybody have another question?
I have another question.
Yes.
As I was looking through these different programs, I see that the goals are set high, and the vast majority of them were met, and that's a great thing. There's only a few that were deficient by a percentage point or two, very minimal. And I'd like to see that continued success. And then when you see some deficiencies, are you trying to look in those areas and see what we can do to improve those?
Each of these programs submits quarterly reports, and I review them quarterly. At the end of the year, we review their annual summary. If there's a certain area, we want them to achieve all their goals, and if there's something that they're not meeting, then we meet with the supervisors. You know, we monitor these programs. They're not really programs in a vacuum because they're all connected to the caseworkers that work, you know, the county employees that are social workers. So, for example, those 100 youth that were delinquent, those youth all had case managers or social workers. The same thing. If you have a social worker, you can call yourself a social worker. If you don't have the certification, you have to use the title of case manager. But they're county employees. They'll have a number of things they have to achieve, and that program will be talking frequently. And by frequently, they're often talking at the minimum once a week with the case manager and filling them in. And then my role as a director and the supervisors is, as you get quarterly reports, you look at bigger trends. Mm-hmm. If there's a program that's not quite meeting a goal or is always just, you know, not quite meeting, that's a dialogue with that agency, often with the supervisor of that program, often at times with people higher up in that agency. And then we make adjustments.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
Anybody want to talk about any other one at random? Touch your eye.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about? We can. If not, I'll let the next division go. I'll just bring it up for you because it got mentioned real quick. Is on the very first page on Children's Service Society. Yeah, the one program that was increased in its contract was supervised visitation. And if you look under there, that's number 3. That program served in 2010 106 families, 211 children. And well, the feedback we got is we needed to increase the number of visits for the younger children we work with. That's really best practice, and we have judges wanting us to do best practice. So I don't think you're going to see necessarily a lot more children in there, but they're going to get more visits per week. Our standard visit now is about once a week for 2 hours. We're going to increase that more to three visits a week for the younger kids. And we're also going to work on getting more visits with fathers who weren't necessarily part of the case. So that number will creep up over time. But really it's the quality and the quantity of the visits as opposed to a lot more children getting visits.
You know, CABA and maybe others do this mentoring thing with children at risk. Do you provide any training to the people that get involved with that? I mean, it seems like you've got people here that are trained on, obviously they have met some goals and so on. I know my son is a mentor for a troubled child, and I never asked him, but I wonder if he ever, I always get to feel like he's just winging it, you know, and yeah. He shows up with a suit on and, you know, and I mean, he does his best, but I don't know that anybody ever gave him any training on that.
I think his father did.
Yeah. Then he's in trouble.
Wow, you're a politician. That was good.
We're not doing any training with CABA. I'm aware of the program, and I think some of the people in the program are actually employees of some of these agencies, and some of it they've learned that way because they sort of do the work.
Adeline's and John are both CABA mentors. I don't know if you went through training for that or.
Yes, they provide some training. CABA does, as well as UWL at Parkside now has a training program for mentors or people who want to be mentors.
Good. Okay. All right, thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
Okay. My contract sheet is green, like my last name.
Makes it easy on us, huh? For us that are challenged.
He's speaking for himself.
I am.
I am
speaking for myself.
You can quote that, Joe.
Yeah.
You can quote that, Joe.
Yes. And I'm certain you know the work that the staff in workforce development, and we deal with a variety of people who come to us for a variety of reasons, looking to build their job skills, get some education and training. Some are seeking financial assistance. Many of the people who come to us are job seekers who are in the programs because they have either lost their jobs or don't have proper training, education in order to get employment. The workforce development staff, we work in partnership. County and contractor staff work together to achieve the goals that we need to accomplish in order to keep, number one, the money flowing into the division, because most of our programs are funded through state grants. The program, the contracted service that I want to focus in is number four, which is Goodwill Industries of Southeast Wisconsin. And it is our largest contract in workforce development. That's why I wanted to concentrate on that particular one. And it's our largest contract because there are several components to this contract. There is a sheet that you were, I think, given out earlier, which I believe is also green. And on one side, it talks about the activity and performance for this particular contract. And if you know, Goodwill Industries provides six different components to this contract. We actually provide a seventh, which is item number three. That's our answering message center for people who come into the center or call us to the center seeking information, advice, or need to talk to staff. And as you can see, for the answering message center, we had over 253,000 calls in 2010 seeking information, looking for workers, etc. Going back to item number four,
the six areas outside of Answering Your Message Center that Goodwill Industries provides for us in this contract is they manage the child care center, the on-site child care center at the job center. And you can see the numbers of people who came through in 2010 and the number of children and the daily visits. They also provide the child care coordination services for us through the Child Care Shares program. After the economic support workers determine who's eligible for this program, Goodwill Industries authorizes the payments to the various child care providers within Kenosha County. We have licensed and we have certified child care providers. And in 2010, we had, I believe it was over 300 child care providers that families could access as they were working. They don't necessarily have to be program participants. These could be people who simply work and need some additional support in order to pay for child care. And you can see the number of families that were served under the Shares child care program. Goodwill Industries also provides job search and preparation assistance to people who come to us. We call that the Personal Career Development Unit. That's another component of Goodwill Industries. They assist families in the W-2 program, the WIA program, the FSET program, with a variety of things to help build their resumes, develop their job skills, computer skills, get employment leads, and hopefully eventually land a job so they don't have to rely on the benefits that we, the financial benefits that we offer. And you can see the numbers again of people who came through for the various services provided through PCDU. Goodwill Industries also provides case management services for those same programs, the W-2 program, the FSET program, the WIA program. In addition, under child support, we have a Children First program for non-custodial parents who need to be connected with employment so that they can start supporting their families. So we provide the same sort of services to our non-custodial parents. Goodwill Industries also provides quality assurance, quality control reviews. Because we are funded through federal and state funds, we have to ensure that the money that we are giving to folks, or the food share benefits, are given out to eligible individuals. And so we do internal audits. The state also does audits to make sure that the program benefits that are being issued are correct and accurate. And you can see the results of those internal and external audits. In 2010, of 1,560 random cases that were selected, and then in turn, the state selected 35 of those. Only two of the cases were found to be in error, resulting in a 2%, just over 2% error rate. And the federal target for errors is 3.64%, so we stay below that federal target. Goodwill Industries also provides coordination for our holiday house, which gives away coats and Thanksgiving baskets and Christmas toys and food in 2010. So those are the six components of this particular contract. On the back side, those are the activities. On the back side, there is the 2010 through 12 W-2 contract performance benchmarks. The state, as I indicated, because they provide us with so much money, they actually give us performance benchmarks that they expect us to attain through the W-2 program, and that's the one we're focusing in on here. We have primary performance standards as well as secondary performance standards, and I only gave you the primary performance standards. We are continually monitored by the state. I get calls weekly, emails continuously, and the state is continually questioning what we do, how we do it, whether we're connecting people to the right services programs, whether we're treating them fairly and professionally. And these are the six criteria that they came up with for our 2010 W-2 contract. The expectation is for job entries, because we're working with these folks and hopefully helping connect them to employment. In 2010, they gave a graduated scale for performance. So you could exceed the performance standards, you could satisfy it, you could need improvement, or you could not satisfy it. And so for job entry, 30% or higher, you would exceed the standard. And you can see what the graduated scale is. For job entry, in 2010, Kenosha did exceed the job entry rate. We received a 30.4 percentage rate. And that was through the combination of, like I said, services provided by both the county and the contracted services, because we worked together to achieve these goals. Another performance goal that the state judges us on is earnings stabilization. What that means is that 6 months after we help a person find a job, the state goes through and checks through Social Security numbers and things like that to see if the folks are still working and if they're still meeting a particular wage amount. For Kenosha, that wage amount happens to be $8.41 an hour. Every county has a different benchmark in terms of wages based on the economic conditions in our community. And so for Kenosha, they determined that $8.41 an hour was a fair wage for this population of people.
Who determines that $8.41 is a fair wage?
The state does. Based
on who are these people?
Entry level. I believe
that's not a fair wage. You can't support anybody. You can't support anybody except yourself, living with your parents.
And certainly we understand that. However, they give us the indicators, and that's what we have to go with.
I would really be interested in knowing who these people are. And, you know, what are their wages?
They're
not using their heads.
And it's different depending on the community. Dane County is higher than us. Their wage expectation is higher
than Dane County is always a special creature. When everybody else has high unemployment, they're low unemployment. When everybody else housing is down, theirs is up. I was up in Madison recently, drove down University Avenue. It's a construction site on both sides. I mean, it's rather disgusting.
These are state benchmarks that, you know, we have to follow. We don't make the rules they do, and we simply do the best we can to meet the goals that they set for us. So earnings stabilization, we met that goal. We satisfied that goal. Customer satisfaction, I indicated, was another goal that they set for us. They want to ensure that the customers that we are serving are satisfied receiving services that they have come into our office for in a timely fashion. And once again, they randomly select people, call them up, ask them a number of questions. There's 10 questions that they ask them, and depending on their responses, they rate us. And 7.5 or higher was an exceed, and Kenosha exceeded the benchmark for customer satisfaction in 2010.
What is an 8.2 rating? I mean, that's not a percentage.
Yeah, that's, I'm sorry. They take the 10 questions and randomly select a population of people and then take an average based on if they survey 100 people, they just take however they rated us between 1 and 10 and do an average.
So we got an 8.2 out of a 10-point rating
system?
Correct,
out of a 10-point rating system, yes. Educational attainment was a new goal that they set in 2010. And this goal was that when we work with folks who come to us who do not have high school diplomas, we give them an initial test to see where they are. Let's say they're at a sixth grade level. The expectation from the state is by the time they leave our program that they will have attained two grade levels higher than where they started out. So if they started on at a sixth grade level, then when they leave our program, the expectation is that we would have worked with them and they would attain an eighth grade level. That's just an example. We did not meet in 2010 that particular level, and neither did at least 70 of the other 72 counties. And I believe this is a standard that the state is going to take a look at and not require it, but call it an information-only standard, because there's a mixed message that's sent to the program participants. The purpose of the W-2 program is to get a job. And so they may start out in basic education to try to attain a high school or HSED degree. But if they find a job in the meantime and they drop out of our program, then they don't come back to try to finish their education. And that's why as we're connecting people with employment, even though they don't have their high school diplomas. It's not very profitable to be in the W-2 program. They get paid $5.15 an hour for participating in the activities. It's set up like a work program, so they have, if they participate for 40 hours a week, the most that they can receive in a month's time is $673 a month. And so, to your point, Terry, if they're getting $8.95 an hour because they have found a job, that's more beneficial for them to get a job than to remain in this program and try to finish their high school diploma, because that's what we want them to do. So we did not attain that particular goal in 2010. Success of job skills training is another goal that we did not put any folks into in 2010. And the reason for that is, once again, the state, the expectation from the state was that we would put folks in a particular training program. And once we have paid for that training, they would have to find a job, and begin working within 60 days of completing that training. There are no guarantees under the current economy that a person who goes through that type of training would land a job within 60 days, and so we did not actually put any people into any training programs. So that's why that one says NA. And then the last goal was, there are a number of people who come to us who have many issues, social, developmental, mental, physical, and when we do our initial screening, if those issues are identified, then instead of trying to connect them with a job, we try to connect them with Social Security instead. And the state put a goal for us of 20% or higher in order for us to receive a benchmark that exceed. For those individuals we identify that have serious barriers to finding employment. And we did connect 33% of people to Social Security, so they are now receiving Social Security benefits instead of W-2 benefits. The footnote on the bottom, the state offered some special incentives in 2010 if you attain the job entry rate as well as the earning stabilization rate, which Kenosha did. Then they would give you additional incentive dollars. And because we achieved both of those, we received an additional $69,694 in 2010. And that's in a nutshell what our performance goals are for 2010. They remain the same for 2011, and they're considering changing them in 2012. Each new contract, the state comes up with different ideas on goals, and we simply work to attain whatever goals the state sets for us. That's in a nutshell our performance goals.
All right, thank you. Do we have another, or is that?
That will conclude our.
Okay. Unless there's another question for anybody on outcomes, we'll move on to the other business authorized by law.
Chairman, I just have a comment.
Sure.
I'd just like to thank the Human Services as a whole for putting this report together. Supervisor Rose made a comment that felt this information would have been beneficial to us during budget time. It probably would have been. We understand what your responsibilities were in Madison. We really do. We appreciate you all giving us such an extensive a report, and I think you did an outstanding job explaining and bringing some, shedding some light on some details. I definitely learned some things tonight as we, the intricacies of how things go with our contracts, and definitely very beneficial to us in how we make our decisions here as a county board. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Okay. Yes. A question, is the board, the committee planning on meeting in December? And I raise it because one of the issues that you asked us to come back and report on was about the Brookside Care Admission Coordinator position. With tonight's agenda full of contracts and outcomes, I wasn't sure how long we'd go on, so I did not schedule that. We can put it on in January if that's the committee's choice. I just didn't want you to think we had forgotten that. If we met in December, it'd be the 27th.
No, I'm okay with January.
Is that the only thing you have to bring forward?
Yeah, right now, yes.
What was it again?
It was on the admission coordinator for Brookside. Position. The committee had asked for a report on how things were going.
Oh, I don't.
I just didn't want the committee
think
to
think that matter if we get that in just
okay,
December
January.
Or January.
Yeah, I just didn't want the committee to think we had shoved that aside. So
the other thing sure is, if you do have something come up, we couldn't. Well, we don't.
If there's an emergency, certainly we can contact folks.
Right.
If, we need to be
if there something. Is something that has to take place, then we don't have a county board meeting. And, until January anyways, other than the December 6th one.
Well, we don't have anything right now.
So we can could probably okay. Just skip that.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other business then? Committee member comments? Any comments from anybody? Supervisor Decker.
Several months ago, we had discussions about the Racine, how Racine was looking into or how they passed a resolution on investigating fraud, I guess is the best way to say it, with police officers or retired police officers they had hired.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we were talking about that, but I think the resolution you were talking about, they hadn't totally passed it
yet. Not at the time that we presented, correct?
But it has now been passed?
I believe it's in the final stages of going before the board. When I talked with Racine last week, it was the resolution was being reviewed by Corp Counsel.
Okay.
And so I think it's going to be voted on in December.
Do they have a program in place to investigate fraud right now?
Yes, they do. They have an internal fraud program in place.
Is there a way we could get the, I guess you could say the investigators to come here and tell us and inform us on what they're doing and how successful it is or something like that?
You're talking their internal fraud program?
Yeah.
That they have in place right now? I could ask the question. I could certainly ask the question. What time frame are we looking at? January?
Yeah, it would be.
Next meeting would be great, which would be in January.
You know, we are starting January 1. We'll be in a consortium with Racine County. Perhaps we'd be better coming back to the committee talking about, as a consortium, what we're doing with the fraud issues. Because as we reported at a meeting, we had contracted with the state who still hadn't picked the vendor, but we've gone outside of that now and have a stopgap measure that we're using.
And I actually have a meeting with Racine County on Monday, December 5th, to talk specifically about their fraud program. I will see if they could make themselves available in January and let you know by email.
Thank you.
All right.
Supervisor, that's it then?
Mm-hmm.
Supervisor
Thank you.
Rose?
Just to follow up on what you said, there are state criminal statutes on this that from time to time seem to be more vigorously prosecuted than not. And I think a number of years ago, there seemed to be a much more vigorous prosecution. There used to be a fraud unit in the Sheriff's Department. Whatever happened to that?
I believe there was a funding issue, and then
we
went away, and so over time, the program went away.
There used to be two, I don't know if there were detectives or deputies assigned to that, and they had a office over here in the safety building. And well, that's all been abolished. It's just
yes.
Absorbed into the general complaints. And
yeah, most of the fraud funding went away in the first quarter of last year.
But that office has been gone for more longer than a number of years. I wasn't aware that was funded by federal funds, though. Is that what you're saying?
I think it was funded through a combination of the Special Investigative Unit.
That's what it was called. Yes, that's what it was called.
They were funded through a combination of child support funds and some fraud funds. And because of the expense of having deputies do that, that got rolled into a contract with O'Brien and Associates. They were doing fraud
for a number of years. And then finally, the first quarter of 2010 is when the majority of the money for fraud went away. The state, I don't know if they directed it. I don't know what happened to the money.
I see.
The first quarter of last year, we ended the contract because the money was no longer there.
See, in these Racine resolutions, just to clarify, these are civil ordinance as opposed to what we're talking about as criminal statutes, which is a big difference. Just for information.
Thank you.
All right, anybody? Anything else?
We'll do adjourn.
Second.
Well, Supervisor Gantz moves to adjourn, second by Supervisor Kubicki. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? We're adjourned.
Thank you. Have a good holiday.
Thank you.
Thanksgiving.